This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980, where you see television and radios. Clint Yates on a Wednesday, because I'm not here on Friday. That's how that's going this week. Clinton, of course, the host of Clinton and Friends nationally each and every morning. You can check that out on the ESPN Radio app or on the ESPN app, because now y'all just have one app, one giant company, one singular app.
It's like one big refrigerator with one big freezer right next to it. That's how I like to think of it. Sure.
Sure.
In the garage. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
No, you can put it that. You guys are in the house quality. Come on.
Yeah, but I don't like that much. I don't need that much machine in my house. You know what I'm saying? You got the beer fridge, and then you got the storage fridge out, freezer.
Oh,
out
no, there. You're saying the size, like
yes.
That's a garage size. Yeah, no, y'all, there's a lot of tentacles on the
that's what I mean by that
ESPN
metaphor.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay, now that we've got that straightened out, let's see if we can fix the NBA in the next 9 minutes or so.
Right.
I know you've been talking about this on your show, and there is the reality that the NBA is continued to grow in terms of the TV contract, so it's making more money than it ever has. But ratings are down. All-Star Weekend was pretty universally panned again. So for me, like, it comes down to the fact that there was so little basketball. Like, that was the thing that was incredibly frustrating, was like, I actually wanted to watch some of the basketball, from the Rising Stars to the actual game, and between commercials and other shenanigans, like, there was so little basketball. But like, when you look at this problem, is this a All-Star Weekend problem? Is this an NBA problem? Is this a basketball problem?
These are two separate things, and I think one of them is a non-problem. The All-Star Weekend thing is a problem. Like, I would agree that the production on Sunday did not meet the level that it had been the previous 2 days. Friday and Saturday weren't that bad. Weren't that bad. But whatever that game was, just completely sucked all the air out of the room. I was not impressed. I had it on. No sound, and I never felt compelled to turn the sound on. And that's not a good sign. You know what I'm saying? Because I saw too many people talking, too many performances, and I'm not some old fogey. You know what I mean? I just didn't want that at that stage.
I'll say, like, the pass the mic deal they did with E40 and Too Short, like, that was good. Like, if that was a singular halftime show, I'm fine with it. The problem is, it was one of like eight things, and the introductions take 30 minutes.
Yeah. I was not in the mood for the full dim sum course. I wanted one meal, and we got all of that stuff. So that's one issue. But the issue about NBA and its play as it relates to basketball as a whole, I think is a fascinating one, specifically that I wanted to talk to you, Craig, about, as you, a man of bodies and kinetic energy. And I mean this honestly, because there's a certain part of the American athlete that we have solved for the basketball player. Every player, effectively, somewhere between 6'5 and 7 foot, long and rangy, handles and can make a shot. The players themselves are all effectively the same guy in a different way than it was 25 years ago, when different body types, different styles of humans, styles make fights, as they say in the boxing world, they were all a part of the melange. Because of the development of the American athlete, we've been kind of making the same type of person. And so now in the NBA, of course the game is all the same type of shots and the same type of things. All these guys are effectively the same NBA 2K creative player. So I don't blame the athletes themselves in terms of that element of strategy. Now, is there an element of effort that involves like NBA weekend? Sure, but I don't even really care about that. I just think that if you've watched basketball over the past 20 years at all levels, you could see this coming. 50,000 dudes named Jalen running around an AAU gym on a weekend, all with broccoli head haircuts. Of course, after those guys are making it to the league. These are the only people playing basketball anymore, to some degree. And I don't mean that pejoratively. I'm just saying that what we're doing with specialization, what we're doing with all of the AAUification of basketball, this is what it leads to at the top level in this particular country. And globally, that is mimicked, and you see what you see. This is not that surprising to me. The question is whether or not the core fan of NBA life, of you know, the NBA, still enjoys that. And I think that's a different question, Craig.
Well, the answer is going to be no, because people like personalities, right? People like things that are unique. Like, part of the reason Stephen Curry is so popular is because he's different. Like, it's like, oh, the 6'3 guy. But the same token doesn't have to be the 6'3 guy. It could be the 7'3 or, more accurately, 7'4 guy in Wemby. It's like, oh my God, look at this guy. It's part of it is the greatness, but part of it is the uniqueness of what they do. And I like, this becomes a really interesting chicken and egg discussion of was it a bunch of 6'5 dudes named Jalen running around, or is that who the NBA decided that was the best thing? Like, they're searching for all of these guys that can play multiple positions defensively, that are good enough offensively, like can shoot it, create a little bit, are athletic slashers. And by the way, they're all trying to more or less play homogeneously.
Yeah.
Like, NBA basketball outside of a few select cities is, we're hunting layups and threes, and it mostly looks the same in how they're doing that with some of the ball screen actions and the way they're defending those actions. Like, if you have a unicorn like Jokic, well, yeah, Denver's offense runs a little bit differently. Sometimes it's not that differently. It's just they invert some of the pieces, but even that is unique enough. That's like, oh, this is different. This is fun. This is cool.
Right.
But I think, like, because not only from a strategy standpoint has it become an extremely homogenous game where you're not saying, okay, we have this incredibly unique talent. How do we maximize it? It is, we think this is the best way to play basketball. How do we fit the pieces into it? Then everyone's looking for the same exact kinds of pieces too. And that is probably not great for the game, because then you wind up reverse engineering those pieces at the youth levels, and everyone is so the same that they have the same name and the same haircut.
This was a problem in baseball. This is a problem across a fair amount of sports sometimes. Basketball is just more intimate. There's less players that are good at it at the top level. So if you don't get that variance in personalities, it's much easier to see. You know what I'm saying? But it boils down to this for me. The game has legitimately evolved. And that is something we do have to take seriously. Whether or not the style of play is one thing, is desirable is one thing, but like, Craig, you know this as well as I do. Everybody can shoot in the NBA. Everybody. Like, the shots go down. That was not the case 25 years ago. You did not have 15 effective dudes on a roster who could all get buckets. And like, we talk about these funny bits where guys like Brian Scalabrine go face off against D3 college athletes who think they could beat him, and he smokes him 15 zap, and you're like, yo, man, that's the reality. The skill level is so much higher that if you don't change any of the other constraints, and frankly, officiating and things like that start to become more lenient towards people that are putting the ball in the bucket, you can't be mad at the basketball players. You can be mad about the attitude. And I tend to agree with you. There's only a certain amount of places that are not sort of doing the sort of money ballification of the game, and it's obvious, but to me, there's an inevitability about all this, Craig, that makes it very difficult for me to be mad at any single one person. This is just what basketball looks like now. And I know that because I've been watching it develop like this in front of my eyeballs, not just on TV,
right,
for two decades. You know, that's just
for
what
sure.
It is.
For sure. And I think that the, like, one, you're always going to have then guys stand out, right? Like, Luka becomes undeniable and he plays differently, right? And you have Jokic, and you're going to have like a Cooper Flagg that comes in and you're like, oh, this dude can do all the other stuff that the other guys can do, but he does it better and he's bigger and he's stronger. And like, he'll be the next guy, and he'll be battling with Wemby for hopefully a decade and a half, who is 7'4" and unique. And there's a great quote. I don't know if you've started watching Court of Gold yet.
No, but Netflix. I'm going to start. I've given a homework assignment to my radio team. We are getting on that. I'm looking looking forward to it.
Yeah, we watched the first two episodes last night, and there's this great quote. I think it's in episode two from Wembanyama, where he goes, yeah, about 4 or 5 years ago, I stopped trying to fit in because I realized like that's not where I was going to be special. He was like, I was different, so I decided I was going to be different. Hmm. And the way that he trains, the way that he treats his body, the way that he approaches the game is very, very different, and it works obviously tremendously well for him. And so there's always going to be outliers that are special and that can carry a team in a different way. And you hope that those talents land in a place that fosters them, that says this is different. But I think most people are going to try to chase that same thing. And, you know, that's what I wonder about a team like the Wizards. Like, they're saying, okay, we have, like, we're going to chase big, long, athletic. We're going to chase positional size. We're going to chase athleticism. We're going to chase skills that are rare and then see if we can develop the parts of the game that we know work. Like, from a strategy standpoint, I actually don't think that's a bad idea. But then how tweakable is that if you land Cooper Flagg in 2025, or yeah, 2025 in the draft, yeah, to say like, now we're going to take these skills that we've been building. We've told Alex Saar, we don't give a rip if you shoot 18% from three this year. We want you to take them because we think eventually that's going to turn you into a 35% three-point shooter. But then once it's time to win, are you able to craft the pieces into the right roles? And that's what makes a great basketball team, the pieces actually fitting together.
I also think there's an element of that that speaks specifically to the district and the style of the game legitimately in terms of the years that we've seen. People talk all the time about how, oh, the Wizards are garbage, DC's a bad basketball town. No, it's not. All right, but the basketball is not happening at the NBA level. The basketball happens all over the place, from the youth level to the college level, on men's and women's sides. Is that formula palatable to fans who know the difference in DC is a legitimate question. I hate to keep returning to John Wall, but the reason why he's so important is because he was such a unique actual basketball player,
right,
that fans were willing to accept that maybe this team isn't going to lose or win a lot or necessarily break over whatever hurdles they can, but we like watching this human play basketball. Is that something that will ever be attainable again for the Wizards? I don't know. And those are the kind of special sauces that are very difficult. Your Ja Morant, you mentioned Jokic, you mentioned Wemby. People that look different in some ways are worth more than people that you can just assume are better. From a different type of marketing standpoint, if winning is not the only thing you've got in mind, and we know for some franchises, it's not.
Well, think about who's sold sneakers over the last decade, right? Like Kyrie Irving, the right way that he plays is so unique. And like, that's the thing, right? They call them signature shoes. Who has a distinctive signature?
Yeah.
Kyrie Irving does. Steph Curry does. LeBron James does. I don't know how successful Giannis's shoe has been. But like, Giannis is the jumbo sized, incredibly unique version of this player that we're talking about that can do a little bit of everything, for sure. But I also think, I'm glad you brought up the women's game. I think this is part of the growth of the women's game. It's the distinctness of styles of like Asia Wilson versus Caitlin Clark versus Kelsey Plum versus, obviously
a Juju Watkins or a Paige Beckers.
For sure. But like, Nafee is having her moment now as she goes and crushes it at Unrivaled, creates a league so she can dominate it. I think that is a huge factor in the women's game. And like, obviously, you know, there's a million factors that go into Caitlin specifically, popularity, but she is having the Steph type of impact because we've literally never seen people shoot 30 footers in the women's game like this. Like, there is an undeniable base of basketball uniqueness and signature play that is the center of her popularity, even if there is then a bunch of branches off of that tree. And so I think that the fact that the women's game is still less homogenous, even though I think that there's more, like the coaching level is getting higher and higher and some of the strategies elevating as more money has gone on to that side of things. I think that is a huge factor and something that the NBA needs to find a way on a signature way, you know, a signature basis to get back to.
I totally agree. And here's the last thing I'll say about it. We talked a little bit about this on the show. I went to see UCLA versus USC. Juju Watkins was playing in that game at home. She went off, had 8 blocks from the guard position. If you would pay your cash money to walk into the building and look at these people do their thing with their eyeballs, you've got a good product. The winning and losing and who's on the shirt is one thing. That is for trolls on the internet. But if I were an executive in sports today, that would be my number one goal. Star power matters. because the sporting is not something you're going to see everywhere. And if the personal experience can make you a different person when you leave than when you got there, that's your goal, and that's what's ultimately going to make you popular, well more than winning and losing, because in some towns, that just doesn't really matter, and that's fine by me, you know?
Yeah. The caller that said that dunk should be worth three, why do they have more of a point than I want them to?
I mean, dog. We've been talking about, you know who tweeted me back about that?
Who did?
The DA, David Aldridge, said he didn't hate it. That was a showstopper, Gregory, for me.
Yeah, for those that missed it, on Clinton and Friends, he had a caller that called in and said dunk should be worth three. And I like that idea. Like, there's a, once I started thinking about it more, like, we could have a whole 30-minute discussion on how that actually works. But on a baseline level of, like, let's reorient the game towards the rim, don't hate it.
Don't hate it
don't
at
hate
all.
It. Clinton and Friends mornings on ESPN Radio. Check it out there. Still obviously on television, writing for Antscape and ESPN.com as well. And you hear him weekly here on The Hoffman Show. Thank you, my friend.
Appreciate you, Gregory.
That is the most normal end of an interview we've ever had.
Goodbye.
Bye, Clinton. All right, Anthony was listening intently to that conversation as a guy who's grown up in the DC hoop scene. We're going to chop it up more about the basketball of it all next.